The GOP's majority in the House continues to shrink as another member announces he's retiring within a fortnight. Nancy Mace goes on NBC and George Stephanopoulos decides to question her about her previous experience with sexual assault. President Biden, in an interview with MSNBC, said there is a red line and we should have a ceasefire. And it appears the United States is willing to degrade an ally in a fight against terrorism. And John Kerry says if Russia were cutting emissions, people wouldn't mind them invading Ukraine. Today on the Tom Meda Family Matters show. Remember when they told us that the adults were going to be in charge after that election in 2020, November of 2020? Welcome in.
Justin Hall. No more mean tweets.
No more mean tweets, but the world's on fire. Justin Hall, Mitch Prosser here with you. It is Wednesday, March 13th in the year of our Lord, 2024.
Ding, ding, ding.
Did I give the date and time and everything on Monday's show?
I think so.
Okay. So, you know, sometimes I get worried.
You did. You did it during our segment with T-Pope.
That's right.
The Pope himself.
Thank you. Thank you. And if you missed that conversation, go back and listen to that on our Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or our website, palmettofamily.org, wherever you get it. Great show lined up for you today. A lot to get into. We start an Axios report on the House GOP majority that is becoming, well, rather slim. Representative Ken Buck of Colorado announced that he will resign at the end of next week.
Which usually means that someone had enough in that little folder to help him resign.
Sure. Republicans' razor-thin margins have created headaches during this Congress, and members of Republican leadership said they were blindsided. Listen to House Majority Leader Steve Scalise. He said, quote, "I haven't gotten to talk to him. He wasn't on the floor, but I'm curious to see why he's leaving early," end quote. House Speaker Mike Johnson told reporters yesterday, quote, "I was surprised by Ken's announcement. I look forward to talking with him about that." So this caught leadership off guard, and you're in a serious situation. Republicans will have 218 seats.
Plurality.
Democrats will have 213 seats after Ken Buck leaves, meaning that the GOP on any given party line vote can only lose two.
And that's not good enough because we understand the fracturous nature of the GOP currently.
Correct.
You have the more center-right, some would argue center-left faction of the GOP, sure. You have the Freedom Caucus, you sure. have several other groups. I mean, you could have someone that just doesn't like something substantive to the bill, and they would vote against it on principle. So what they're doing right now is they're not taking party line votes.
No, they're not. They can't. The resignations of Kevin McCarthy and Representative Bill Johnson of Ohio, as well as the expulsion of George Santos, and his seat got flipped, by the way.
Naturally.
Because have led Republicans to this point.
It was a swing district to start with. Actually, it was probably more blue than it was red.
Brian Higgins' seat will be up for a special election in April.
Mm-hmm. And then two in June.
Net Democrats another seat. Republicans are then poised to win the May and June elections to replace McCarthy and Johnson. Colorado Governor Jared Polis has already announced that he intends to set the special election to fill Ken Buck's seat for June 25th. Steve Womack of Arkansas said, quote, "It lowers the margin and that creates an obvious challenge for leadership." Representative Mike Kelly from Pennsylvania, "I'm concerned about the majority. I just wish the rest of our party was." House Rules Committee Chair Tom Cole said of his the decision of Ken Buck, quote, "Obviously it makes the numbers that much tougher." House Republicans have dispensed of many party-line votes out of fear of right-wing defections. Major bills are now routinely being passed through a process known as suspension, which requires a two-thirds majority for votes to succeed. Womack explained that Buck's resignation means in practice is that if it can go wrong, it probably will go wrong at the worst time. "We already have a close majority, so it requires us to be just as vigilant as always," said Ben Klein, a Republican from Virginia. Buck has evolved. This is the backdrop given by Axios. Buck has evolved in recent years from a right-wing bomb thrower to preeminent Republican critic of efforts to impeach President Biden and Homeland Security Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas. He was one of three Republicans who voted against impeaching Mayorkas, much to the frustration of his GOP colleagues. "We're down to the point where every vote counts. Ken is not always a predictable vote. He's a very independent vote, but I hate to lose him, said Ben. Said Cole. Republicans are also worried about what Buck's resignation may say more broadly about Congress as an institution at a time when his historic number of lawmakers in both parties are planning to retire. Congress is like life. You have good years and you have bad years, and it's been a difficult Congress, no question about it. Womack said he worries that there, quote, could be other members out here who have decided not to seek re-election that might choose to end their careers early because of other opportunities. Asked whether he's facing heat from his colleagues, Ken Buck told Axios, quote, I think it's the next three people that leave that they're going to be worried about, end quote.
Mm-hmm. There are more coming.
So here's why this is important. I'm not so much concerned about Ken Buck leaving the Congress. I really truly couldn't care less. I am worried and concerned about the majority. That's how you get things done in Congress. The concern I have is that conservatives don't know how to conservatively govern. That's number one. Number two, I do believe that this casts a pall upon the House leadership of Speaker Johnson. I believe Speaker Mike Johnson is probably the most conservative conservative House Speaker of my lifetime.
Yeah, and
maybe outside of Newt, maybe not Newt Gingrich, but in my lifetime, he's probably the most conservative.
Yeah, and I think that's fair. Newt Gingrich was fiscally conservative, but how quickly people forget. And I'm not castigating Newt Gingrich. He was not a what's the right word? He was not a conservative when it came to social issues.
And one could argue that maybe Mike Johnson isn't as fiscally conservative as many would like. Now, if the GOP had maybe a 35 or 40 or 45 seat majority, might we see things differently right now? Sure.
Sure.
I think so.
And a lot of people think that that's what's going to happen.
I don't.
In 24. I don't think it's going to be.
Prediction.
I think we lose the House.
I was about to say, and it's March 13th, so there's a long way to go. But my belief right now, and I was telling my wife this the other day.
And let me be careful.
Conservatives.
I think conservatives and more broadly, Republicans lose the House.
I understood what you meant by we. If things play out like I think they will, I think Republicans lose the House, but I think they gain the Senate. The Senate seats up are very advantageous for Republicans in 2024, for conservatives in 2024. I would like to think that they can win the Senate outside of their best attempts not to.
Yeah, I think Arizona.
Now, Arizona is ripe for the picking, but with Kyrsten Sinema announcing she will not run for re-election now. Now it's just a two-person race between Carrie Lake and Ruben Gallegos. And trust me, I only know his name because his ads are running on Twitter all the time.
In the wrong state, naturally.
In the wrong state, naturally. So the key is if you're going to lose the House, you got to gain the Senate. The problem is the House controls the purse strings. Now, the Senate can hold things up as long as you want to. And, of course, the big key, the big orange elephant in the room, is that you got to go win the White House, ultimately.
And that ultimately is going to be what's up for grabs.
If you win the White House and regain control in the Senate and lose the House, you can live with that.
And some may not like this. I maintain the tack that it's going to be very difficult mm-hmm. for Donald Trump to win re-election. It's just going to be difficult.
Well, I think there's a path there.
There's a path.
I think the path is easier. I actually think the path is easier for him to win this election in 2024 than it is for Republicans to keep control of the House. And we can have a deeper conversation on that another day. Speaking of House Republicans, Nancy Mace, South Carolina Congresswoman from the 1st, she has a primary challenger, by the way. Catherine Templeton is challenging her for that seat. And Newt Gingrich has endorsed Catherine Templeton, by the way. So look at that, full circle. Got us circled all the way back to where we want it. Nancy Mace joined George Stephanopoulos.
By the way, what notable figure endorsed Nancy Mace? Did you see this one coming? This wasn't on the bingo card. Donald Trump.
Well, she endorsed him. I scratch, you scratch my back, I scratch yours.
Sure.
Which was weird. Yeah. Because Catherine Templeton is giving away MAGA gear at her campaign events. So she's running, like, Catherine Templeton in the first is running as the MAGA candidate.
Yeah.
But Donald Trump has endorsed Nancy Mace.
Yeah.
Pardon the pun. The first can be a very incestuous race when it comes to primaries.
It can be.
Now, again, want to remind you that in the first congressional, back in 2022, former Governor Nikki Haley endorsed Nancy Mace. Donald Trump endorsed her challenger, Katie Arrington.
And we saw how that went.
Nancy Mace trounced her, went on to win the general. Over Annie Andrews.
There were a lot of other circumstances.
Sure.
I don't think that the endorsements.
But in that case, then we go to 2024 primary. Nancy Mace endorses Donald Trump and not Nikki.
One would argue that may be an unstoppable duo in the first. For conservatives in the first.
Sure.
Not for the first at large.
No, and the first is always a seat that could flip back blue any given cycle.
Like that.
So, anyway, back to the point. Nancy Mace joined George Stephanopoulos on ABC, Powerhouse Roundtable, to discuss backing Trump and the state of the 2024 race. Now, I'm just going to play you the clip. I'm not going to give you any lead in. We'll play it, and then we'll talk about it.
Congressman, thanks for joining us this morning. And you've endorsed Donald Trump for president. Mm-hmm. Judges and two separate juries have found him liable for rape and for defaming the victim of that rape. How do you square your endorsement of Donald Trump with the testimony we just saw?
Well, I will tell you, I was raped at the age of 16. And any rape victim will tell you, I've lived for 30 years with an incredible amount of shame over being raped. I didn't come forward because of that judgment and shame that I felt. And it's a shame that you will never feel, George. And I'm not going to sit here on your show and be asked a question meant to shame me about another potential rape victim. I'm not going to do that.
It's actually not about shaming you. It's a question about Donald Trump.
No, you are shaming
me. You've endorsed Donald Trump for president.
Right.
Donald Trump has been found liable for rape by a jury. Donald Trump has been found liable for defaming the victim of that rape by a jury. It's been affirmed by a judge.
It was not a criminal court case, number one. Number two, I live with shame. And you're asking me a question about my political choices, trying to shame me as a rape victim, and I find it disgusting. And quite frankly, E. Jean Carroll's comments when she did get the judgment, joking about what she was going to buy, it makes it harder for women to come forward when they make a mockery out of rape, when they joke about it.
It makes it harder for women to come forward when other women joke about it,
and she's joked about it. I find it offensive, and I also find it offensive that you're trying to shame me with this question.
I'm not trying to shame you.
You are.
Well. In fact, I have dealt with this for
30 years. You know how hard it was to tell my story 5 years ago when they were doing a fetal heartbeat bill and there were no exceptions for rape, incest, or incest in there? I had to tell my story because no other woman was coming forward.
I'm just asking.
No rape victims were represented. And you're trying to shame me this morning.
I'm just asking.
And I find it offensive. And this is why women won't come forward.
Women won't come forward because they're defamed by those who perpetrate rape. Donald Trump has been judged
and they're shamed, and you're trying to shame me this morning. I think it's disgusting.
I'm not shaming you at all. I told my story.
It took me 25 years to tell my story. I was judged for it. I still get judged for it today.
So George Stephanopoulos is, and I'm supposed to be practicing being more kind and practicing restraint. George Stephanopoulos has the IQ of Gumby.
That's not fair.
In this instance, he has the IQ of Gumby.
I will say he has the EQ, the emotional intelligence of Gumby.
Okay, fair. All right, fine.
EQ. He knows what he's doing.
George Stephanopoulos worked for Bill Clinton.
Well, he's definitely noseblind.
Bueller? Anyone? Juanita Broderick? Anyone? Bueller?
Paula Jones?
Bueller? Hello? No? Nothing? Using your superiority and your position of power to coerce an intern? Anyone? Anyone?
Yeah. I get
it. Hello? George. George. Come on, bud. George. Okay. Now, I don't always agree with Nancy Mace.
But Bill Clinton is not orange.
That's true. Now, Leslie Milwee as well.
just for good measure.
There are Kathleen Wiley. Sorry. Christy Zurcher.
And we never said Monica Lewinsky. So.
Ellen Wellstone.
You're pulling all these off the
Sandra
top
Allen
of your,
James.
You're pulling all these off the top of your head. I'm impressed.
Sure. Karen Hinton. anyway.
Wow.
Anyway. So it's completely hypocritical of George Stephanopoulos to say you shouldn't support a candidate who has been accused of rape.
He's been found liable.
Let me tell you something as well. This is the most basic Christian worldview you can have on this topic. And that is, it wasn't a criminal case, it was a civil case. And he was found civilly liable, which means he just had to pay a bunch of money. And then, let me again remind you, the woman, E. Jean Carroll, is, well, kind of crazy, first of all, but that holds no bearing here. She, in 2015 or 2016, maybe 2017, with Rachel Maddow, she bragged about how some women view rape. It made light of rape. No one should make light of that. That is a very serious thing. And this is where I can agree and I can sympathize with Congresswoman Mace. It's a very serious issue. And it should... It's a very serious issue, and I know everything's political. That's how life is. Politics is interfacing with government. I get it. Or many blood-sucking creatures, depends on your take.
Polyintics.
Sure. There are some things that shouldn't be political footballs.
Rape is one of them. Babies should be another.
Children should be another. So I want to make sure that we understand that George Stephanopoulos brought her on, and to the point, her advance team probably should have seen this coming.
Yeah, but you would think that certain things just would be off limits. Not necessarily even off limits.
He's just asking a simple question. Donald Trump raped somebody, and you were raped. How can you support him? See, that's also the problem. Because that's the political football that's going to be thrown at Christians. And it already is, and it has been. If you're a Christian and you say you're voting for Donald Trump in 2024, people are going to ask you how. How can you vote for him? Listen, is Donald Trump a Christian? I don't know. I have no way of knowing. I am not able to discern the heart of man. I can't. However, I can tell you that as a Christian, my vote is not always necessarily an endorsement of the person. My vote is always an endorsement of the platform. My endorsement is always an endorsement of the policy, not necessarily the person. And so to try to harangue Nancy Mace in this moment, and kudos to the Congresswoman, because she turns George Stephanopoulos on his ear. He continues, by the way, that's a 9-minute clip. We only played 2 minutes. There are significant problems in our mainstream media, and as somebody who took journalism classes and who graduated with a degree in it, from the university right down the street, I can tell you that these sort of things are taught in the school.
Sure.
I can tell you that for a fact.
I got you.
And you're literally, there are courses teaching you how to shape the narrative. So kudos to Congresswoman Mace for being able to overcome that. While I disagree with her on many policy instances, and I'm not too fond of her flip-flopping back and forth on some things, I respect her courage to tell her story.
Yeah.
Rape is a horrendous thing and is just one piece of evidence that we live in a fallen, evil world that can only be redeemed by Christ. And hopefully, as she's told her story multiple times now over the last 5 or 6 years, hopefully there has been some healing, and there will continue to be some healing for her. And hopefully there comes some understanding to people like George Stephanopoulos, who worked for possibly one of the most scummy presidents of the 20th century, and there are a lot of them, that maybe, just maybe, and I'm not going to do it because I don't want to play the intersectionality card. Maybe, just maybe, as a news guy, you shouldn't try to corner the congresswoman on you were raped, so how can you support somebody who's accused of it?
She went on a show yesterday, Monday. Yesterday was Tuesday.
Yep.
She went on a show yesterday and talked about the female executives at ABC. How do they feel about this?
Right.
I mean, how do they feel about this, the scummy behavior of their leading Sunday show contributor? I mean, he is the face of ABC politics. George Stephanopoulos, Danny Little George. That's two presidents of now.
Good call.
Yeah, I'm going to do Abraham Lincoln here in just a second. and George Washington.
Are you doing Daniel Day-Lewis doing Abraham Lincoln?
Yeah.
He was pretty good, Abe Lincoln.
He was pretty good. It's concerning to me that the rules are for thee and not for me. You can say whatever you want as long as it attacks somebody you disagree with politically.
Mm-hmm.
But the moment it's turned about, it's not fair play. It's wrong. No. George Stephanopoulos was wrong for bringing it up.
Yep.
And so is anyone else who tries to exploit someone's story for political gain.
Absolutely.
It should be that there are certain things, you know, we used to say family's off limits. But that also means you don't put on your palm card, hey, this is me and my family, and we're just a bunch of good old fashioned people. If you don't want your family to be put in the limelight, don't put them in the limelight.
Right.
Nancy had to tell her story. She felt because it wasn't being heard. Okay. I think we got to be careful. I think we've got to be careful here. And George, yeah. you owe Nancy an apology.
And he won't. Right now, there is an ongoing vote as of this recording to divest CCP money from TikTok, to pressure CCP divestment in TikTok.
Which, on its face, sounds like a really good idea, but there's some current concerns with antitrust law, specifically that an American government would force the sale of a company that does not belong to them. I find it probably constitutionally more feasible to disallow their behavior as opposed to divestment.
Well, that bipartisan vote currently with the bill still ongoing in the vote, 326-55-1.
Wow.
So it is a broad bipartisan
advancement
of this legislation.
Goes to the Senate next.
It should pass the Senate, and it shouldn't be.
What do you think that does to? And I think it's care. I think I'll be very careful how I say this. U.S. China, but also U.S. Russo relationship.
If I can be quite frank,
do you not care?
I don't care. Also, Chinese Communist Party does not fall under the First Amendment. So
it's fair.
And the simple fact is TikTok in China is different than TikTok in the United States of America.
Speaking of relationships and good and bad relationships, mm-hmm. President Biden speaking?
Having a problem with lots of things.
Speaking?
President Biden did a sit-down with Jonathan Capehart on Saturday. By the way, do you want to know what the name of Jonathan Capehart's Saturday show is on MSNBC? It's super unique. It's called The Saturday Show. here's President Biden. Here's the first clip discussing a red line with Israel.
What is your red line with Prime Minister Netanyahu? Do you have a red line? For instance, would invasion of Rafah, which you have urged him not to do, would that be a red line?
It is a red line, but I'm never going to leave Israel. The defense of Israel is still critical. So there's no red line. I'm going to cut off all weapons so they don't have the Iron Dome to protect them. They don't have. But there's red lines that if he crosses and you cannot have 30,000 more Palestinians dead as a consequence of going after. There's other ways to deal, to get to deal with. With the trauma caused by Hamas. It's like the first time I went over, I sat with them and I sat with a war cabinet. I said, look, don't make the mistake America made. America made a mistake. We went after bin Laden till we got him. But we shouldn't have gone into Ukraine. I mean, we shouldn't have gone into the whole thing in Iraq and Afghanistan. It wasn't necessary. It wasn't necessary. It just caused more problems in the race than it's been cured.
This mushmouth has no idea what he's saying. By the way, if you're not familiar with Israeli maps, if you're not familiar with...
This South Carolina could help. Their maps and such.
If you're not familiar with it, and that's okay, because a lot of people are not, and that's cool. Simply put, Rafah is in Gaza territory, sure. That's not shocking at all. However, it's south of Ashdod, and to be quite frank, if you're trying to stop Hamas, you've got to do something. And I love how the president says, oh, well, that's a red line, but I'll never abandon Israel. I'll never abandon Israel.
He's conflicted.
Yeah. Yes, he is, because his entire foreign policy in Israel is being directed by the Hamas caucus in the House. He is willing. Joe Biden is so power hungry, and he is so craven to remain president of the United States, that he will give up on an ally, for all intents and purposes, just to gain 100,000 votes in Michigan. That's where we are. That's where we are. And I get it. I get it. It's always election season in the White House. I get that. I get it. But at some point, we have to be willing to call a spade a spade. Here's another clip from that. He said there's no red line, even though there is a red line. He said there's a red line, but then he said there's not a red line. There's a red line, but I'm not going to stop sending weapons to Israel. Well, then what are you saying? Remember, caught on a hot mic after the State of the Union, talking with Antony Blinken and a member of Congress, saying that he told Netanyahu they need to have a come-to-Jesus meeting. I would love nothing more than my Jewish brethren in Israel to come to know Christ as the Messiah. I would love that. But maybe as the sitting president of the United States, you should not say that the sitting prime minister of Israel, the only Jewish state in the world, needs to have a come-to-Jesus meeting. Perhaps that might set you at odds. And also, that's coming from Joe Biden, who... Never mind. Here's Joe Biden on Israel.
Do you think Hamas actually wants a ceasefire?
Well, I think Hamas would like a total ceasefire across the board, because they would see they have a better chance to survive and maybe rebuild. But that's not what I think the vast majority of people think. You have to look. After what happened in World War II and the carpet bombing that took place, what happened was we ended up in a situation where we changed the rules of the game, what constitutes legitimate rules of war.
I want to make one thing abundantly clear. If you noticed, if you're listening to that clip, you heard the pause and you thought your phone might have frozen. No, he just needed to reboot. The president had no idea what he was saying. He said, well, of course Hamas wants a ceasefire. Yeah. Of course, then in his head, hopefully the synapse is fired, and he remembered, wait, I called for a ceasefire 2 nights ago in my State of the Union.
And then he starts talking about carpet bombing.
In World War II. Yes, that's right. That, you know what? I imagine World War II would have gone differently if, as the Allied troops moved in on France and Germany, that the Allied troops... What if the Allied troops said, you know what? Our offensive on the German military is causing too much civilian casualty and harm. We have to stop.
I'm sure they would have done that.
You know what would have happened? We'd all be speaking German.
Yeah.
And I love German food, but no.
Wiener schnitzel.
It, German food's really good.
Yeah.
It's starchy and a lot of carbs, but it's good. This man does not know what he's talking about. This man has been in Congress, y'all, since 1972. 50 years. 50.
He was in the White House for a few, I mean, he's been somewhere around 2015 or 2017.
He's been in D.C. for 50 years. I see what you're doing there.
I'm trying.
He's forgotten more than you'll ever know. No kidding.
And forgot it again.
This mealy mouth approach. By the way, NBC report. Listen to this. A U.S. intelligence report casts doubt on the future of Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's far-right government, suggesting it might be replaced by more moderate leadership. Hold on.
But wait.
Are we literally offering up public intelligence reports questioning the veracity of Israel's government during a war?
Yes.
The only democracy in the Middle East. Is that what we're doing? Because I've been told with Ukraine, we're supposed to defend democracy. Because Ukraine, Mitch, and let me rephrase that. Mitchell, Ukraine. Ukraine is the beacon of freedom. That's right, the beacon of freedom. So much a beacon of freedom that they're not holding elections and haven't. So much a beacon of freedom that one of their main pushes is the trans ideology, Mitch. Then that's why we must continue to send money unaccounted for. We must bypass Congress to send more money. But in Israel, their far-right government's not going to work. By the way, the government of Israel is operating under a war cabinet right now, which includes Benjamin Netanyahu and the chief opponent to his leadership, Benny Gantz.
Which means
Benny Gantz is center right, more likely center left. Like, understand this. Before this happened, so the attack on Israel was October 7th, 2023. I was in Israel a little over a year ago. Before that, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
While we were staying in northern Israel, in the Galilean region, green, beautiful, in the town, just down from our kibbutz, they were having massive anti-Netanyahu protests in the streets. The people didn't like him because of the judicial reform stuff. Guess what? After October 7th, you know what stopped?
The Bibi protests.
Yes. You know why? Because they're at war. Because Israel is trying to be annihilated by Iran through Hamas and Hezbollah. And Syria, for that matter.
You think they're trying?
They're trying to eliminate Israel.
Right. Yes.
And because it's a wartime government, the Benny Gantz, Bibi, they've put aside their differences for now. And they're trying to hold together a nation and defeat an existential threat to the very existence of Israel.
Mm-hmm.
Meanwhile, we have a geriatric old man in our White House.
Back at the White House.
Who is claiming that Hamas, we need a ceasefire. And then I love that he continues to cite Hamas's number. 30,000 Palestinians dead. Do you remember when the apartment complex collapsed in southern Florida back in 2021?
Yes.
You remember that?
Yes.
Do you know how many weeks it took us to get a final death toll?
Weeks.
Why is it that Israel drops one knock bomb and then an actual bomb somewhere in Gaza, and immediately we're told how many people are dead? Don't stop using Hamas's numbers. They are terrorists. And Hamas could end this war today if they put their weapons down. That's all you have to do.
But listen, man, all they want is the right to exist.
Golda Meir said it best.
They're defending their right to exist.
If the Palestinians were to put down their weapons today, we would have peace. If Israel were to put down their weapons today, we would not have Israel. It's very simple. And then this president's going a step further. We're actually sending troops to build a pier on the coast of Gaza. Do we think that's smart?
Is that a suicide mission?
I'm not going to say that. I am going to say that I fear we will lose U.S. men and U.S. soldiers. We will lose men and women over this. And this White House will treat it the exact same as they treated the men and women who lost their lives in Afghanistan.
Political football.
They won't say their names.
And somebody will end up getting arrested
for
the state of the
declaring
United.
That they should. It's disgusting. This White House, the way this White House has obfuscated morality on this issue and obfuscated America's place on the national scene. When American power is sidelined, the world goes sideways. And we're seeing that over and over. One final thing, the climate czar, Mr. John Kerry, has thoughts that he would like to share with you when it comes to Israel, or excuse me, when it comes to Russia and climate change.
Russia has the ability to be able to make enormous changes if it really wanted to. I mean, if Russia has the ability to wage a war illegally and invade another country, they ought to be able to find the effort to be responsible in the climate issue. Unfortunately, because of the actions that Russia took in an unprovoked, illegal war against another nation, we have not been engaged in discussions with Russia, sadly. I say sadly because it's a loss for the world not to be able to have Russia acting constructively on this issue. But we need every country, including Russia. Russia is one of the largest emitters in the world. If Russia wanted to show good faith, they could go out and announce what their reductions are going to be and make a greater effort to reduce emissions now. And maybe that would open up the door for people to feel better about what Russia is choosing to do at this point in time. I believe that...
So John Kerry
is a great statesman.
He's a great statesman because he says if Russia were just to cut their carbon emissions or say they're doing that, people wouldn't mind if they're invading Ukraine. See, I don't believe Ukraine is the be-all end-all for in terms of democracy. I don't believe they're the be-all end-all for the good of humanity. I don't. I'm sorry, I don't. I also don't believe it's right that Russia invaded them. Both things can be true. I don't necessarily believe that America should continue sending billions upon billions of dollars to Ukraine, but I also believe that Vladimir Putin is an authoritarian dictator who is hell-bent on killing his enemies. Both things can be true. But why is this administration trotting out people like John Kerry and tell me that if Russia did more to fight the evil sun monster, people wouldn't mind them going to war? What? What does that mean? What is John Kerry saying? Is John Kerry saying that the ultimate threat to the good of society is not bad people doing bad things? Is it more the fact, is the greatest threat to society actually that there's this evil sun monster, and if we don't spend gazillions of dollars to try to fight it, then that's bad?
Yes and yes. Because remember, the evil, bad people are the ones that depleted the ozone layer in the first place through their Aquanet hairspray and their eating of red meat because
and their
of the methane
18-wheelers
from gas from cows.
Growing their corn and things to feed us.
You know, and the polar bears don't have a place to live, and they're eating the penguins. And wait, never mind. And, you know, they're just, you know, last time I saw, they hung out on Coca-Cola commercials.
With Santa.
I mean... Duh, because Santa visits both poles.
Correct.
It's ridiculous. It makes me sad that our country is being led by people like Joseph
Robinette.
Biden and John Kerry and people behind the scenes like Valerie Jarrett and Barack Obama. If they could thread the needle more successfully, I'd just be blown away because they're somehow able to pull all this off. And the American people are starting to catch on, but they're still buying what they're selling. I'm hearing, are there certain things that we could do to curb emissions? Yes. I think we need to be good stewards of the resources that God has blessed us with. But are we, through greenhouse gases, carbon emissions, and, you know, all of these things, going to curbing all that, spending, what was your number?
Gazillions.
Gazillions of dollars, somehow going to make sure that polar bears have a home to live in? No.
Right.
Could it be? Could it be that the Earth goes through cyclical changes?
No.
And that we're coming out
too scientific, man.
That we're coming out of an ice age of some sort 700-800 years ago, and we're seeing that now play out, and at some point again, to say this as my independent Baptist friends would do, the Lord tarries, is coming. Earth will cool down again, and we'll all be wearing wool sweaters in the summer.
Well, here's the thing. I'm going to let you know it's the possible. I'll close the show with this. Global warming will happen, and it will, and it will be bad. Peter says it's all going to burn.
Well, there's that. The elements will burn with a fervent heat. Yes.
So, also, the Andromeda Galaxy and the Milky Way Galaxy are set to collide at some point in the next couple hundred to thousand years. So, you know.
But they'll probably call that off, too.
That probably shrinks the importance of our entire show, doesn't it? Feels like none of this really matters anymore.
Feels like a couple shows ago when I said giant meteor 2024.
Yeah, maybe that's actually going to happen. Who knows? We appreciate you joining us on the program today. As always, it is our pleasure to bring you the news and commentary about the news and how you can view these things from a Christian worldview. A lot happening across the country here in South Carolina. The House of Representatives just passed the budget for the upcoming fiscal year, and they will move on to the Senate. The House is done until next Tuesday. They get some time off now after working nonstop to get that budget passed and handled. Wink, wink. So they'll be back next week, and of course, we're still monitoring the South Carolina Senate to see when they will actually take up Help Not Harm, plus several other bills that are over in the House, over in the Senate that the House has passed, and looking to see those get done. If you want more information about Palmetto Family, palmettofamily.org. Click on that invest button. Support the work that we're doing. We would appreciate it. Your investment does not go unnoticed, and it is put to good use as we work inside the State House, churches, and communities across the state. For Mitch Prosser, I'm Justin Hall. God willing, we'll be here on Friday.
Unless the giant meteor.
Well, giant meteor.
Or Greta Thunberg has her way.
Giant meteor or little tiny baby. Who's to say?
Oh, that's right.
Who's to say?
Boy, his world's going to be rocked like a giant meteor.
I will tell you this. Friday, I'll go ahead and give you your advanced date and time. Friday is March 15th.
The Ides of March.
Wear the Ides of March. We'll see you on Friday.